From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world, and the world covered all the time zones like a blanket by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, and it is my honor and privilege to be escorting you through the weekend. It's going to be a good one, folks. Coming up next hour, Charles Seif, part two. And Charles, last weekend, man, what a blast that was. This guy can talk on any subject and in a way that is understandable and digestible for the average person, which includes me. I mean, we just literally covered everything. So I'm not sure where we're going to go in part two, but go he can. That I know. All right. I've got a little news. We had an ultrasound. That's right. We went into Las Vegas. Dr. Camaro is our doctor. We had an ultrasound and ta-da-da-da-da-da, it's a girl, which is exactly what I wanted. It is a little girl. And I've got the ultrasound photographs. You never know. I may choose one and put it up tomorrow evening. Oh, God, it's a good little girl. It's exactly what I wanted. Really, exactly what I wanted. I was hoping for a girl. And I didn't want to say too much until, I think a lot of you sort of knew that and sensed that because we had picked out a girl's name, Asia. That's going to be her name, which is kind of interesting because she will be Asia Bell, right? That makes her an AB, Asia Bell. Then, of course, my wife is Irene, or I call her Aaron. Either way, AB. And of course, you know me, AB. So that'll make us AB, AB, AB. And by the way, I found out, you know, with all the blood testing and everything, that Aaron is O positive and I'm O positive. So two O positives and three ABs. Anyway, a little girl. And I just couldn't be happier about the whole process. My theme song now is by Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And when I die, right? There'll be one child born to carry on, something like that. I should dig that up. I really should. A little girl. It is to see, and by the way, they have come a very, very long way with ultrasound. And it is it's the most amazing, God, it's the most amazing thing you've ever seen. And at the end of the process, they give you a DVD of the ultrasound. Now, it's done in color and three dimensions. Can you imagine that? Three-dimensional color ultrasound. It's incredible. You know, and they zoom in, and they look at the little four-chamber heart, and they look at all the little organs in the spine, and they just ensure that everything is all right. It's just, it's like watching a miracle. And you can see the baby moving around. And we were afraid for a little while that we were not going to make the determination whether it was a boy or a girl because the cord was uniquely right between the legs, preventing us from seeing anything. So they pushed and shoved a little bit. The baby moved, and there it was, a girl. I won't tell you how they marked it. The webcam shot tonight, Aaron took, that's me, and of course, Dolly. Now, there's a kind of a story there. Dolly is okay now, but she came very close to not making it, folks, along with Yeti. She caught a cold, actually an upper respiratory infection, which she then passed on to Yeti. We rushed them both to the vet at the beginning of last week, and they administered shots, and we have been doing two and three times a day of antibiotic by mouth. And so Dolly is now back with us, beginning to get perky, running around, eating, obviously back in the world again. And one other thing, if you look at the photograph tonight on the webcam, which is up the upper left-hand side of the website, coasttocoastam.com, you'll see it says Art's webcam, click there. It's kind of a whole new setup. You know, I had stuff in this studio room of mine that was probably, not probably, was 16 years old. 16 years old. And so Bill Hickey, an engineer for the network, came up here. think it was Wednesday. And, oh, my God, he worked till about 1 o'clock in the morning, then came back the next day. He removed about 13 years of dirt, grime, junk, wires, things that have been kludged together over the last 16 years or so, and sort of redid everything. So thank you, Bill Hickey. What a job. What a terrible job. I never would have. Well, the only way to do it was just to rip everything out, remove 6 inches of dust and dirt, and start all over again, and that's exactly what he did. Looking briefly, because I already ate up a lot of time at the news, it's only worth briefly, convinced that it is their moment, tens of thousands marched Saturday in an anti-war demonstration linking military families, ordinary people, and an icon of the Vietnam protest movement in a spirited call to get out of Iraq. Celebrities, a half dozen lawmakers, and protesters from distant states rallied in the capital under sunny skies, making it easy, seizing an opportunity to press their cause with a Congress restive on the war and a country that has turned against the conflict. New York Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton blamed President Bush on Saturday for misusing authority given to him by Congress to act in Iraq, but conceded, quote, "I take responsibility," said she, "for her role in allowing that to happen," meaning her vote. In an interview with the Associated Press, Clinton also said she would not cede black votes to Barack Obama and that she had proven herself as a U.S. senator in that gender is simply irrelevant. 7 U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq. Always bad news. Iran currently installing 3,000 centrifuges. A top lawmaker said Saturday in an announcement underlining that the country is going to continue to develop its nuclear program despite U.N. sanctions. The lawmaker said the installation is underway at a uranium enrichment plant, and it will stabilize Iran's capacity in the field of nuclear technology. Just what we all want. An escaped prisoner who evaded a manhunt across the southeast by stealing, oh, and I've got more on this, 3 vehicles, including, as you know, Crystal Gayle's tour bus. Now, how could he do that? I'll tell you more about that in a moment. Anyway, he's now once again behind bars, but he doesn't stay there very long. Maybe it's a weird winter. Maybe it's just weird weather. Or perhaps the newly Democratic Congress. Maybe it's the news reports about starving polar bears or the Oscar nomination for Al Gore's Global Warming, An Inconvenient Truth, and I haven't seen it yet. Whatever the reason, years of resistance to the reality of climate change are now suddenly melting away like soon-to-be history snows of Kilimanjaro. What a way to put it. I like that. Years of resistance to the reality of climate change are suddenly melting away like the soon-to-be history snows of Kilimanjaro. Poetic, but pretty depressing. In a moment, we'll look at some of the remaining news. Well, it's hard to believe, but true. The fugitive parked the million-dollar tour bus on the grass at the USA International Speedway at dusk Thursday, stepped inside the front office, and lied through his teeth. He said that he was on the advance team for the NASCAR superstar, Tony Stewart, and that Mr. Stewart was planning a surprise visit and he needed a generator to run the bus. He was calm, collected, wore a Tony Stewart hat and some new white sneakers. "What did you say your name was?" track manager Barry Williams asked. "Daniel Pitts," said the man. "Good racing name," Williams said later, "but I just knew something was wrong." Williams called the Florida Highway Patrol. They ran the plates on the bus as Pitts locked the doors and pulled out of the parking lot. Well, lo and behold, registered to country singer Crystal Gayle's tour bus. "What are the odds?" said President Bill Martino. Turns out, of course, the police in 4 states were looking for Pitts, whose real name is Christopher Daniel Gay. They say he's a small-time criminal who's been making headlines since he escaped from a prison escort in South Carolina on Sunday. Gay's 32 years of age. He was on his way by a private company from Texas to Alabama, where he's wanted for stealing a camper when he escaped in full shackles. That's right, out in full shackles at a welcome center on Interstate 95 in South Carolina. Police say he ran 4 miles through the woods before he stole a pickup and escaped from 19 officers and their bloodhounds. He drove 300 miles undetected. He then stole a Walmart semi-trailer truck from a store parking lot in Manchester, Tennessee, about 70 miles south southeast of Nashville. The police spotted him again Tuesday evening in Cooperstown, Tennessee, where his family lives. They led him on a chase down back roads, reaching speeds of 70 miles an hour in a semi, mind you, before he ran the truck filled with about $300,000 in merchandise into a field about 50 yards from the house where his mom lay dying. Abandoning the truck, he ran into the woods and disappeared again. She's at the house where he ran to, said the police chief in Cooperstown. His mother is dying of cancer. You can understand why he did what he did, but it's just the way he went about it. He wasn't spotted again until Tuesday when he pulled into the USA International Speedway in Lakeland in the bus belonging to Crystal Gale. He knew quite a bit about racing, said Williams, who called the Florida Highway Patrol with a plate number when he grew suspicious, well-mannered, not at all violent or even weird. Gale, it turns out, has got a long record of stealing trucks and other heavy equipment. He once stole a bulldozer in broad daylight, waved at a police officer as he loaded onto the back of a truck. This was not the first time he ran from the law. In 2000, he convinced prison guards in Georgia that he was suicidal, so they put him in a new cell near the door. First opportunity, he bolted. The law finally found him 2 years later. Perhaps he's a little claustrophobic, said Lieutenant Dan Martin. He just can't stay in one place very long. Florida Highway Patrols issued an all-points bulletin for the bus, which was reported stolen from bus company garage in Nashville. Of course, he's under arrest now, actually. It was gone when the troopers in the area arrived. Now, how hard could it be to find Crystal's tour bus? It doesn't say Crystal Gale on the side or anything. You know, that a lot of people, I'm sure, would try to get her to stop and say hi. Gale, meanwhile, really wants her bus back. Her crew parked it after a recent gig outside Houston. She needs it for the rest of her hectic tour. She says, we called that bus old blue. Old blue, she told the St. Petersburg Times on Friday from Nashville. It was definitely special. It's my bus. When you go out on the road, it's your home away from home. She said, she and her band have written several songs while on Old Blue, and it brings back some fond memories. But Gale said she also feels sympathy for Gay and his family. I wish when he took my bus, he would have just gone to visit his mama instead of joyriding in Florida. I feel for both of them. Just want everyone to be safe. Barry Williams, not as gentle. Yeah, I'm pulling for him, he said, to go back to jail. He's an escaped convict. So there you have it. That's the full story. And now, of course, he's apparently under arrest and on the way back to jail. For how long, nobody knows. Incidentally, those of you knowing the portals to get in are welcome to pick up the phone and join us. The North Polar ice cap is melting at an alarming rate due to global warming, according to NASA scientists, with satellite images showing the cap continuing to shrink. It's happening now. We can't afford to wait. That's David Rind of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies in New York. Change is in the air, literally, he says. The part of the Arctic Ocean that remains frozen all year round shrank at a rate of about 10% per decade since 1980. Now think about that. 10% every 10 years. The cap reached record lows in 2002 and 3, he added. Researchers at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration are worried because global warming speeds up as the ice cap melts, forming a vicious cycle. Snow and sea ice are highly reflective because, well, they're white. Most of the sun's energy is simply reflected back to space. With retraction of the ice cover, that means less of the surface is covered by this highly reflective snow and ice, and so more energy has been absorbed and the climate warms. U.S. and Canadian scientists reported back in September that the largest ice shelf in the Arctic off Canada's coast has broken up due to climate change. It could well endanger shipping and drilling platforms in the Beaufort Sea. The Ward Hunt ice shelf has been in place on the north coast of Ellesmere Island in Canada's territory for at least three thousand years. Get this. Russia, headline, Siberia's once frozen tundra is melting. The landscape of Siberia is transforming. New lakes forming in the north, while existing lakes are getting bigger, some buildings and houses built upon the permafrost are now beginning to sink and starting to crack. Imagine if you were there. What's more, scientists expect this process to speed up because, again, as the lake thaws, they release carbon and methane into the air, which in turn contributes to more warming. Permafrost exists all over the world, but Russia has the largest patches of it. Scientists estimate that permafrost covers more than 10 million square kilometers of Russia. A Russian scientist, Mikhail Sugman, first coined the term permafrost, or eternal frost, in the late 1920s. But now, less than a century later, it doesn't seem so eternal. Scientists are worried about how permanent it really is. Larry Smith, professor of geography at the University of California, LA, and colleagues compared satellite images of Siberia from the early 1970s to those taken in 2004. They found the total area of lakes has increased by more than 12%. If you just think of a deeply frozen landscape, when you first start to thaw it out, it's going to puddle up at the top. In southern Siberia, where the permafrost is more sporadic, lakes are actually disappearing at an equal rate as the permafrost degrades and lake water seeps into the ground. The effects on wildlife are very profound. Birds in the south have to find new areas to raise their young, while small mammals like badgers are now being seen in parts of the north for the very first time. So the process that we have talked so much about on this program, in fact, really predicted about a decade ago, is now more than well underway. Most scientists now agree global warming is a reality. Now, tomorrow night, we're going to have a gentleman on who questions the modeling, whether it's modeling for global warming, climate change, or, for example, putting nuclear waste in Yucca Mountain, close to me. He's going to question all modeling. He's a math guy, but again, like Charles Seif, who's coming up in about a half hour, he's going to, I hope, be able to explain to you in language, not mathematical language, but language that you will understand, why modeling is poo-poo. Although one has to say that the global change climate modeling they've done has so far been pretty much on track. So it may be poo-poo, but it looks as though it really is occurring. Now, that'll be something to bring up tomorrow evening. He's just very angry at the mathematics of it all. We have time to take one call very quickly before the top of the hour, so let's give it a shot. East of the Rockies, Dale, Centerville, Indiana, you're on the air.
It's good to speak with you, Art, and I just wanted to be the first to congratulate you on the birth of little Asia.
Thank you.
Knowing that it is a little girl, it's great
to
hear.
It's amazing, Dale. Have you seen recently?
No, I haven't.
It's amazing.
The new visions must be something else. Your book, The Coming Global Superstorm, it seems like it's very coming much to pass.
It seems so, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And I had a question. What do you think, it's totally unrelated to the weather, what do you think of this North American Union that they're proposing? Do you think that's going to occur, and what effect do you think will that have on our way of life here in the United States?
Okay, I'll tell you, Dale. Number one, I think we have to do it. The Europeans have done it. The Asians are doing it. And if we don't do it, we're not going to remain competitive. Now, that said, there are going to be a lot of things that a lot of us are not going to like about it. So there's going to be a big impact. But if we don't do it, we're not going to remain on top of the heap.
How will that affect the exchange rate of our money? Do you think we will lose value in our current money, or do you think that it will hold its value?
Actually, I think that once the union is a fact, kind of like the European Union, that the strength of whatever currency they call it would go up.
So you think that even if it might be a lower number value, it would still have more buying power?
Yeah, that'd be my guess. I mean, if we're stronger as a trading block, Dale,
yes,
then obviously our currency is going to be worth more. I mean, if the whole idea works out. It's worked out for the Europeans. Looks like it's working for the Asians. We have to hope that it will work for us. It's just one of those things that's inevitable in the world. Now, do I want a one-world government? Hell no. But otherwise, trading, yeah. I'm Art Bell. Yes, indeed. Here I am. I really didn't lay too much into it, but as I mentioned to you, our kitty cats were really sick. Now, I mean really sick. I thought we were going to lose Dolly. She was that sick. Her lungs were filled up, and she was just really, really sick. And we both shed some tears, serious tears, rushed her to the doctor. And she got shots. Yeti got it, too. He was also, but not as bad as Dolly. And I thought, my God, if we immigrate a kitty cat all the way to the U.S. And then we lose her, what, you know, what have we done? So the week was filled with medications. In fact, the doctor said also steam would be good. Now, as you may or may not know, I have a steam room here. And so, poor little Dolly. I took Dolly and Yeti both out to the steam room and put them in there, turned it on. And you've never seen such a miserable sight in your whole life. Two little cat faces pressed up against the glass. And all this steam, well, we had to take them out two or three times a day and put them in the steam room. And Yeti got to the point where he knew he was going to go to the steam room. And then I was in danger of losing, you know, a fair amount of skin in the process. But go to the steam room, they did. You can imagine these pathetic little faces staring through this foggy glass at us. And we would sit there and keep them company. But they were not happy campers. Nevertheless, the steam helped a great deal. Now both are very much on the upside of this horrid little disease, continuing to take antibiotics and back with us. In fact, Dolly is now beginning to play again and strut around, so she's going to be okay. That's what's been going on this week. In a moment, your calls. As promised, directly to the lines, it's Anna in Hudson, Florida. Hi, Anna.
Hi, how are you this evening?
Very well.
Good. So I told the young woman who answered the phone my tale of woe. We went to Georgia to attend my sister's funeral. It was a week and a day after her passing. And, you know, I wrestled with what to do with our dog. And the last time we went away, she didn't eat for 5 days. So I took the dog with us. Found a hotel room, no problem. The evening that we left, I went to go have dinner with my brother-in-law. So I checked out of the hotel, brought the dog over to my sister and brother-in-law's house, and her dog was left in their bedroom with the door ajar. And we locked my dog, literally shut the door, closed the door, and locked my dog in the bedroom where my sister had passed away and left for dinner. And when we came back from dinner, my dog is prancing around the house with a toy in her mouth.
Really?
Yes. So my brother-in-law says, Maria went and let the doggone dog out. She's probably mad. She didn't want the dog in that room. And I said, no, Daryl, your biggest fights with her was really over you locking the dog up. If anything, she would have let your dog out, not mine. So we, you know, we head back to Florida. And actually, before we left, though, my brother-in-law is one of these Bible-reading, church-going, grace-saying Methodists. So he was really, really intent on getting one thing out of the house that he never wanted in the house, and that was my sister's box of Halloween decorations. So we stuffed those in the back of the car, and my son and I, with the dog, we take off and head back to Florida. And we get home, and less than an hour after we're home, my dog starts having breathing problems, and while I'm calling to get the nearest veterinary hospital that's open at that hour, my dog passes away.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it was actually, you know, losing my sister, we were prepared for that. Coming home and losing the dog, we were not prepared for it. And it's my firm belief that my sister took my dog.
Why
you know,
would she do that?
well, she wouldn't take her dog because her dog would be keeping her husband company. They had no children. But she figures, hey, you know, she's got Steven, Steven has her, I can take
Was
this
your
dog.
dog, old and infirm, or what? What?
My dog was an 8-year-old German short-haired pointer.
Yikes.
And she
Well,
was.
as the police always say, I'm so sorry for your losses, plural. But maybe that's exactly what happened. Who knows? Our animals, my animals, and I'm sure yours, are like our children. And their loss is as great as, well, not as great, but very close to as great. I'm so close to my cats. I mean, I just shed tears and tears and tears for little Dolly. It was awful watching her this last week with her lungs full. She just couldn't breathe. You could see she could not breathe, struggling, and it was horrible to watch. And who knows? I guess something like that could indeed occur. West of the Rockies, Carol in San Diego, you're on the air.
Oh, Art, so I'm so excited to talk with you. I've been trying for years. My boyfriend, who I'm sorry to say, passed last July, was a big fan of yours, and he got me listening to you. Now I'm still carrying on the tradition without him.
Oh, well, thank you.
And we both know met Shorty in Vista, California, which is about 50 miles north from us, who is a ham radio operator. He said
You
he
know
knows you.
Shorty? You know
Yes.
Shorty?
Yes.
Shorty and I go back about 20 years or so, actually 25 or 30 years.
I'm embarrassed to say this. My palms are sweating. I'm just so happy. If it wasn't for Daryl, I would not be listening to you.
Well, thank you, Daryl.
And I don't know, did you get my email? I sent you an email, a picture of my one-eyed cat.
I did. Yes, I did.
She's 17 now. That's an older picture. She's a lot slimmer now. She's a small, petite one.
Well, as we get a little older, we get a little slimmer. Some of
Yes.
us, anyway, and certainly I've dropped a few pounds. Thank you very much.
And after Daryl's passing, I had to move back home with my dad because it's very expensive to live here. We're Daryl and I were both natives. And every time I just got off work and I thought I'd give it a shot to see if I can talk to you and God
Well,
help me.
you have done so. San Diego is, thank you very much. San Diego is kind of like a place where they have eternal springtime. It's just eternally spring in San Diego. Every day is kind of like a nice, warm, average spring day for the rest of the country. It's just an absolutely beautiful place. And so, of course, property values reflect that. Let's go all the way to the wild card line and Claudia in Canada. Hi, Claudia.
Hello. Hey, Art, do you know the difference between American cats and Canadian cats?
Eh?
No?
What?
Oh, well, a Canadian cat would say, meow, eh? Anyway, I've been listening to you. I actually figured it out 18 years since 1989.
Wow.
And the funniest story or the funniest conversation you ever had with anybody that has ever called in. This is what struck me. Do you remember a young man calling you up? His name was Sean. And he thought you were recording. And he had a cat named Shane that played rubber bands. He kept them under the fridge.
I do recall, Sean.
Yeah, it would go something like you say, well, the line's on. He says, hello. You say, hello. Art? This is Art.
Yeah.
No, this is
I know
recording.
there was a lot of that.
Yeah, that was so funny. My husband could duplicate the whole thing. And the cat had the bands under the fridge there, and he used to pull it out and lie on his back and get it between his back feet and pick it with his front or with his
Oh, yeah,
teeth.
I recall very precisely, and I particularly recall people who, once they actually got me, refused to believe that it was me. Now, those were the days when no call screening took place, and I think that had something to do with it. You know, when you get a call screener, you get the screener, and then, of course, you know you're going to be coming on the air. So when I come on the air, it's not really a surprise. But I used to pick up lines just like that, with no notice whatsoever. And so a lot of the people who actually connected with me, because they'd called other talk shows, simply refused to believe that it was me. And no amount of assurance would assure them that it was me. So I, in some cases, I gave up. I just said, okay, no, it's not Art. And why is it you want to talk to him anyway? And we'd get into these long conversations about why they wanted to get on the air. And it was all on the air. It's Fred in Michigan. Hi, Fred.
Hey, Art.
Hey.
I know you're a high-tech kind of a guy, as I am too. And I wanted to put you onto a fellow who actually did the R&D for lasers. He's an ophthalmologist in Texas.
Yes.
He developed the ophthalmology lasers, and he had some unresolved physiologic challenge going on that apparently became pretty serious. Art, the Russians, for their space program, developed an electronic instrument. Do you want me to give you the name of that?
The electronic instrument?
Yeah, that the
if
Russians.
You wish, yes. Uh-huh.
Called the Skinner. Well, this ophthalmologist in Texas decided to see what it might do, and it corrected, transformed, resolved this problem. And when it came off patent, the Skinner, he sort of upgraded it, et cetera, refined it with his electronics. And this guy, really, I won't give out the website, but
thank you.
I know a lady, Ed. I mean, Art, geez, there's a lady who's a paramedic out west who used one of the two instruments, and some friends of hers with a boy with cystic fibrosis, normally, which is fatal somewhere around age 20. Well, she told me last year the parents gave her the go-ahead to see what the technology might do for improvement. Within 1 month, no more cystic fibrosis problems.
Well, it's another kind of miracle story. What I would ask you to do is email me the information. I'd be glad to follow up on it. But you always have to wonder, you hear these stories about miracle cures and that sort of thing, and I'm sure it happens. Whether you can actually attribute it to that specific instrument or not would require a whole lot more testing and a lot more results. But I'd be glad to look at it. Anything that's new, anything that has a chance of really being, you know, a miracle to people with horrible diseases like that, I'd be glad to look into. I hear about a million of those things a year. People email me about all sorts of medical miracles that they've run into, and special machines that cleanse the blood and machines that do this and that. Some of them, I'm sure, work. Now, do they make it through the rigorous testing that's required before anything makes it to market? No, they don't. Are most of them real? No, they're not. Could some of them be real? Yes, they could. All the way to Georgia, and Reverend Dane, is that correct?
Yes, sir. I'm glad to talk with you. Hey, I got a question for you and then a comment about a sighting of my own concerning a UFO, and I'm a Christian.
All right, well, the question first.
Okay. First of all, I host a television show in this area, and I was looking, I sent you an email with my website. I didn't want to announce it on the air, but asking if someone in this area who would I could talk to, take maybe a series of shows and take this subject seriously. Not to make fun of them, not to poke fun at them, but to look at a objective look at it.
Okay, I'm waiting for the question.
Okay, okay. Is that it? Okay, that was the question. Is there someone in this area that that you could reply to my email, you could point me to appear on my show?
Well, I can't allow you to give your email out on the air.
No, so I'm not going to do that. I sent you an email just a few minutes ago.
I see. All right.
Okay. Now, in 1986, October 1986, I was in the process of moving down in this area. And I was in the southern part of Iowa, and something caught the glimpse of my eye, and I looked at it, and for a few seconds, I really didn't believe what I was seeing, but the more I looked at it, I realized it was real. It was like a It's not like black, but almost a dark purple to black, perfectly shaped triangle. And it was traveling and not making any sound whatsoever. It could not have been more than 150, 200 feet from me, up in about a 12 o'clock high range in the air. And it went too slow for aircraft, in my opinion. And then about 20, 25 seconds later, this thing, instead of going straight on the horizon, it just shot up vertically and disappeared instantly.
Well, Reverend, what do you think you were seeing?
Well, I have no idea. Either some type of secret craft or technology they were testing in the area away from a lot of people to see.
And you don't think it could have been extraterrestrial?
Sir?
Could have been extraterrestrial?
Well, I don't know. I have never seen any aircraft yet.
Could have been a transport vehicle for one of the devil's disciples.
I won't go there. I'm not one of these preachers that see a demon under every doorknob.
Well, I know, but how about behind every saucer-shaped object or triangle hovering in the sky?
Well, I have no idea. It wasn't quite hovering. It was more like going horizontal.
Going horizontal.
And then about 20, 25 seconds later, it went vertical. But when it went vertical, it was like super fast and disappeared within a half a second to a second.
All right. I appreciate the description. You are now welcome to the club. You know, the Chicago sightings were very interesting. The Chicago Tribune reported on some of the sightings, and the way they treated it, I was not all that happy about. I really wasn't. It sounds like a tired joke, but a group of airline employees insist they are in earnest, and they are rather upset that neither their bosses nor the government will take them seriously. A flying saucer-like object hovered low over O'Hare International Airport for several minutes before finally bolting through thick clouds with such intense energy that it left an eerie hole in overcast skies. This is according to some United Airlines employees who observed the entire phenomenon. Was it an alien spaceship? A weather balloon lost in airspace over the world's second busiest airport, a top-secret military craft, or simply a reflection from lights that played a trick on the eyes? Officials at United professed no knowledge of the November 7th event, which was reported to the airline by as many as a dozen of its own workers, when the Tribune began asking questions recently. But the FAA says its air traffic control tower at O'Hare did receive a call from a United supervisor asking if controllers had spotted a mysterious elliptical-shaped craft sitting motionless over Concourse C of the United Terminal. No controllers saw the object, and a preliminary check of radar found nothing out of the ordinary. The FAA is not conducting any further investigation, said Corey. The theory of the sighting was that it was caused by weather phenomenon. The UFO report has sparked some chuckles among controllers at O'Hare. Quoting one, to fly 7 million light years to O'Hare and then to have to simply turn around and go home because your gate was occupied is simply unacceptable, said one controller. Some of the witnesses interviewed by the Tribune said they are upset that neither the government nor the airline is probing the incident in any way whatsoever. Now, here's the interesting line. Some of those who saw the object were shaken by it and, quote, experienced some religious issues over it, according to one co-worker. Religious issues. Now, that's over simply a sighting. And what a sighting it was at O'Hare. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell.